What's going on, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of the JT Sports Podcast. I'm your host, JT, and I'm really amped up tonight. Okay, I'm so riled up because Cam Newton is getting crucified for his opinion. And people are trying to make it seem like Cam Newton doesn't have a right to an opinion. They're asking, man, who are you to be calling such and such quarterbacks game manager? Like, people forgot who the hell Cam Newton was at his peak. Like, it really irks me how people just look down upon and disrespect Cam Newton's career. Trust me, we're about to get into it real soon. We're going to talk about Cam Newton's comments, the backlash that he's facing for it. Big Ben, he also had some harsh words for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Why Texas can win a national championship. What college football coaches must win big in 2024. Patriots, Belichick saga. Is Bill Belichick going to return to New England? There's a report that has came out that says that the Patriots have already made their decision on Bill Belichick's future. They don't plan on bringing him back. This happened after they lost to the Colts. I got some thoughts on it. And Arthur Smith, what is his future with the Atlanta Falcons? Before we get into it, leave a like, subscribe to the channel if you haven't already. Remember that every episode of the podcast that's uploaded on the channel, including the live streams, you know, once we get done going live, you can find the JT Sports Podcast available on all podcasting platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcast from, the JT Sports Podcast is available. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us with a 5-star review on Apple and Spotify. Share the pod with your friends, family members, and acquaintances as well. If you enjoy and you want to support the pod, let's get into it, man. So, Cam Newton is getting crucified for having an opinion. And he said on one of his recent podcast episodes that Dak Prescott, Brock Purdy, Tua Tagovailoa, and Jared Goff, they're game managers, not game changers. And it's really crazy how Cam Newton's opinion just makes people forget about how good this dude was at his peak. You have people saying, man, Cam Newton, who are you to call Dak Prescott or Brock Purdy a game manager? Have y'all forgotten that Cam Newton was the number one overall pick in 2011? He was the Heisman Trophy winner in 2010, led Auburn to a national championship. He was an NFL MVP, took Carolina to the Super Bowl, and he's a multiple-time Pro Bowler. I hate how people just look down upon Cam Newton's career, trying to make it seem like this dude was a bum. He was a scrub when, for the majority of his time, when he was in Carolina, he was a top 12 quarterback. This dude has a right to have an opinion. This isn't no nobody that doesn't know what the fuck he's talking about. And I just hate how people disrespect Cam Newton and don't really give him props for the career that he had when he's one of the best dual threat quarterbacks in the history of the National Football League. He isn't a scrub. He's not no bum. Is he a Hall of Famer? No, he's not. But he would be in the Hall of Very Good along with countless other solid quarterbacks in this league. Cam Newton, he was tripping with this take though. Dak Prescott has not played like a game manager this year. He's played at a really high level. He has pretty much carried that Dallas Cowboys offense on his back. Yes, they do got Tony Pollard, and the run game has been pretty solid. But Dak Prescott has been the heart and soul of that Dallas football team this year. Cam said that Dak Prescott has a great defense to rely upon. Dallas defense is good on paper and they look good anytime they play a trash quarterback. But when they go up against one of the better offenses in the NFL, they get carved up. This defense had their best performance last week when they clobbered the Philadelphia Eagles. But outside of that game, they got scored upon a really good amount of times Thursday night against the Seattle Seahawks. They got killed by the 49ers earlier this season. And even then, the first time they played the Philadelphia Eagles had a lot of success on offense in their first game against each other. So it's not like Dak Prescott is getting carried by the team around him. When it comes to Brock Purdy, I don't even call him a game manager neither. He's way better than what Jimmy Garoppolo was. He can get outside the pocket, extend plays. He's really accurate, throws with great anticipation. I mean, I get sick and tired of this whole who's a game manager quarterback and who isn't, because it's pointless. It doesn't fucking matter. All that matters is if you have a quarterback that's good enough to win you games and potentially win you a Super Bowl. Cam Newton said that Dak and Brock Purdy, they're not game changers. He considers Patrick Mahomes, Tyreek Hill, and Lamar Jackson to be game changers. Those are guys who can carry you to a win. And I agree with that to a certain extent. But every quarterback in the NFL needs to have somewhat of a talented roster for them to win a Super Bowl. Nobody can just carry a bad team to a championship. Look at Patrick Mahomes right now. His receiving core is awful. And look at Kansas City. They're not as good this season as what they have been in the past. Even when Mahomes lost to Brady in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago, his offensive line got destroyed in that game. Absolutely dismantled. We got to stop with this narrative that great quarterbacks can just win with anybody in a bad situation. No, you cannot. How successful you are as a quarterback in the NFL depends on where you land, how good of a team you have around you, and how good of a coaching staff that you have. It's hard to be an elite quarterback in this league and to have a lot of success when you don't have those things in place. Look at Justin Herbert with the Los Angeles Chargers, man. He's one of the best quarterbacks in the league, and yet he's been let down due to poor coaching and an organization that refuses to spend big-time money to get a good head coach. Hell, people call Drew Brees a game manager for years, and he's potentially going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer when his time comes up and he's able to get inducted into the hall. So I don't really care about the whole game manager argument because it's pointless. Can you get the job done or not? Can you throw accurate passes to open wide receivers? Can you lead your team on a 2-minute drive to win the game? If you can do that, you're a solid quarterback. It doesn't matter if you're a quarterback that can do more with less or less with more. Like, it doesn't matter. Can you go out there and execute? That's what the game of football is about. If you can execute and you're good enough to lead the team to the playoffs in the Super Bowl, I don't give a damn about you being a game manager or a game changer. It doesn't matter. You got to be able to go out there and to get the job done. Cam Newton was not a game manager. This dude definitely was a game changer at his peak. I was listening to The Herd earlier today, and he had Jason McIntyre on there, and I always try to give him a chance. But he had a really awful take when he said that Dak Prescott has had a way better career than what Cam Newton has had. Like, what? Just because Cam Newton isn't in the league no more doesn't mean that this dude was a bum. He's not in the league because the Carolina Panthers weren't able to give him a good enough team like what Dak Prescott has had his whole entire career with the Cowboys. Cam Newton was the run game for Carolina and pretty much the damn offense. He led the Panthers to the Super Bowl with his best receiver being Ted Ginn Jr. Dak Prescott has had the luxury of being able to throw to Amari Cooper, CeeDee Lamb. You got Brandon Cooks as a number two option. Imagine if Cam Newton would have had as talented as a team as what Dak Prescott has had the last couple of years in Dallas. You see, Dak Prescott hasn't led Dallas to a Super Bowl. He hasn't won an MVP. Why do people try to knock Cam Newton and try to make it seem like this dude isn't qualified to give his opinion when he's played this game at the highest level and has earned the highest achievements that you can in the NFL outside of winning a championship? That's it. I'm so tired of people disrespecting Cam Newton and not giving this dude his roses for the career that he had. He's one of the greatest dual threat quarterbacks ever. He was a trailblazer. If it wasn't for Cam Newton, we wouldn't have Josh Allen or Anthony Richardson in the NFL right now being first round selections. He had paved the way for a new generation, a new era of quarterbacks. So I don't agree with Cam Newton's whole entire take per se. Okay, Dak Prescott and Brock Purdy, they're more than just game managers. Tua, I can agree with that to an extent, but just because you're a game manager doesn't mean that you're not a talented quarterback. Tua is a top 10 QB in my eyes. He's a high-level game manager at that. I mean, why do people get criticized for being able to get the job done? Tua can deliver accurate passes. He gets the ball out fast. He makes pretty good decisions with the football. Eventually, he's going to become better in big games. Jared Goff, I fully agree with Cam that he's a game manager. Chauncey Gardner-Johnson went on X and started running his mouth saying that, man, Cam, we need to go and get a messy Wednesday going because Jared Goff is not a game manager. Yes, the hell he is. Have you not seen Jared Goff play the last couple of weeks, Chauncey Gardner-Johnson? The dude has been turnover heavy. He isn't one of those quarterbacks who can consistently win you games. There's a reason why the Rams traded away Jared Goff in exchange for Matthew Stafford. It's funny how the Rams went to a Super Bowl with Jared Goff, and a few years later, they traded him in a swap for Matthew Stafford. And when they got Matthew Stafford, his first season in LA, they won the freaking Super Bowl. So yeah, it is levels to this, but certain quarterbacks like Dak Prescott and Brock Purdy, I wouldn't label them game managers. They're way past that. Are they top five quarterbacks in the game? No, they're not. Are they elite? No, they're not. But they have looked elite based on this season, and they've played at a top five, top 10 level based on their production this year. Dak Prescott is having the best season of his whole entire career. We've never seen Dak Prescott look this efficient, and he hasn't been carried with the team around him. He's elevated this team. This defense is super talented when you look at everybody that they have on paper. Michael Parsons, okay? You got De'Ron Bland, who broke the NFL record for most pick six in the season. But that doesn't mean that this defense is always performing at the level of the amount of talent that they have. Like, Dak Prescott, if you take him off this Cowboys team, they probably struggle to get into the playoffs. You got to give this dude respect. And you got to give Brock Purdy respect. If this dude wasn't the last pick of the NFL draft a while back, he was a first-round pick, everybody would be riding his you-know-what. We got to stop trying to put limits on guys just based on where they were drafted. Some of the greatest quarterbacks to play this game weren't first-round picks. And it isn't just Tom Brady. You know, Joe Montana, I don't believe he was a first-round pick, if I'm not mistaken. Dak Prescott himself, he was a mid-round selection out of Mississippi State. Just because you're drafted after the first round doesn't mean that, at best, you're only going to be a game manager quarterback. Game managers or quarterbacks that are still good enough to win you games. Jimmy Garoppolo was a game manager, and he took the 49ers to the Super Bowl. But he was a quarterback that the 49ers won in spite of. You don't see the 49ers scared to put the ball in Brock Purdy's hands or run into the million times like how you did every time the 49ers made a deep playoff run. There was one time the 49ers lost in the NFC Championship and they were scared to throw the football with Jimmy G. But even then, Jimmy G had some pretty good moments. You see, Dak Prescott and Brock Purdy, they can come through in big moments. Their teams don't win in spite of them. The 49ers win because of Brock Purdy. There's a reason why they traded away Trey Lance. There's a reason why they kicked Jimmy G to the curb. Brock Purdy is more than just a game manager. This dude is a really good quarterback. I'm getting tired of people not giving Purdy respect. But to end this segment, we got to stop trying to downplay Cam Newton's career. He was a really good quarterback. He wasn't a Hall of Famer. But in terms of being able to live up to the expectations that comes with being a number one overall pick at the quarterback position, Cam Newton lived up to those expectations. He won the MVP award. He led Carolina to a Super Bowl. He had a really good career. I want to discuss coaches that right now, if they can't win big next season, they potentially could be out of a job around this same time next year. We got to start off with Sonny Dykes. They went to the national championship game. Georgia beat the shit out of them. And then how does he follow that up? Well, he goes 5-7 this past season. TCU, they did lose a lot of talented players to the draft. A lot of their veterans from last year's team graduated. But nobody expected TCU to not even be able to make it to a bowl game. And if Sonny Dykes can't turn this thing around and TCU can at least get the 8-9 wins in the Big 12 conference that is going to be without Texas and OU, then he possibly could be in that Gene Chizik, Ed Orgeron discussion. When you look back at Sonny Dykes' coaching resume, when he was coaching at Cal and SMU, it wasn't like this dude was consistently putting up great seasons year after year. He'll have an 8-win, 9-win, maybe a 10-win season here or there, but he wasn't consistently looking like a juggernaut as a head coach at those previous programs. TCU going 5-7 after coming off a national championship appearance is really disappointing. If he can't find a way to win at least 8 games in 2024, you possibly got to start looking at him as the next Gene Chizik or Ed Orgeron. Billy Napier, this dude has to find a way to make Florida relevant again in 2024. Because it's not looking pretty for him down there in Gainesville. It's looking really dark. Florida, they weren't a team that many people had high expectations for coming into 2023. They have a fairly young team. But it's still no excuse to go 5-7. Their best win was when they beat Tennessee at home. And Billy Napier, he also has struggled to make the right hire at defensive coordinator. Austin Armstrong, he has been no better than the previous DCs that Florida has had come down there. So Billy Napier can't find a way to have Florida playing at a high level in 2024. I believe that there's no way this dude is going to get a fourth season. Year three, there's no more excuses for you. The biggest selling point with Billy Napier has been recruiting and the fact that he's a pretty good coach when it comes to having your team prepare for big games, but we haven't seen that. And I'm a little bit biased when it comes to Billy Napier, despite me being a Miami Hurricanes fan, because I watched a lot of film when he was coaching at Louisiana Tech with Elijah Mitchell. So I'm giving this dude a little bit more leeway than what most people are. But you have to start producing some results. And with how tough Florida's schedule is going to be, and the new look SEC with Texas and Oklahoma coming into town in the conference now, you really question if Florida is ever going to be able to have a winning record with Billy Napier being their football coach. I mean, they start their first game of 2024 against the Miami Hurricanes. Mario Cristobal, also a coach who probably should be on this list because he needs to win big next season. Billy Napier, the recruiting has kind of went down the last couple of weeks. Has Florida fans panicking. He can't really make the proper staff hires. The play calling isn't great. There's a lot of adjustments that Billy Napier needs to make. And if he doesn't make them and they're not successful in 2024, without a doubt, he's going to be without a job. He's not going to get a fourth season. One thing about that Florida fan base and one thing about that program down there, they give you enough time, but they're not going to give you 4 years when you're not being able to put up winning seasons. I mean, even his first season, they got blown out by Oregon State in their bowl game. Billy Napier needs to win more than any other coach in the SEC, not named Sam Pittman. Tony Elliott at Virginia, he's been the coach of the Cavaliers for the past 2 seasons, and they haven't won any more than 3 games. We need to start seeing some progress out of this program in 2024. This dude is a really good leader. He showed really great leadership when UVA had a lot of tumultuous things going on off the field with their university. I give him a lot of props for that. They also pulled off a big-time upset against UNC this past season. But to go 3-9 for your first 2 seasons, that definitely has to put you in that hot seat category come next year. Virginia should at least be able to contend for a bowl game. And nobody expects for Virginia to be a championship contender or to even win the ACC championship. But under Bronco Mendenhall, this was a respectable program. This was always a program that you could look at and say, yeah, they're not going to be a contender in the ACC, but they at least are going to be a quality team where they can win 6 to 8 games. And that's probably all Virginia fans are expecting. They're not expecting anything fantastic. They don't have high expectations. Tony Elliott has it pretty made at Virginia. 3-9 and his first season, 3-7, unacceptable. You know, Virginia was in a rebuild, but even this year, they possibly could have at least won at least 5 games. You know, you got to start seeing some growth out of Tony Elliott there at Virginia. This was somebody who was on Dabo Swinney's staff, and a lot of people that come from that Dabo Swinney coaching tree, they don't work out. There was one guy who was a former OC for Dabo who got the head coaching job at USF, and he got fired. Only a couple of years in, and USF had no progress. Is Tony Elliott going to be another fell Dabo Swinney coaching tree hire? The best coach that Dabo Swinney has had, without a doubt, has been Brett Venables. That's it. Tony Elliott, The offense hasn't really looked great at Virginia, and I do know that they are rebuilding. And I have to, you know, rephrase what I just said a couple of seconds ago. Like, 3 wins, your first 2 seasons. You know, I don't know if it's really acceptable when you look back at the games that Virginia played in this season. If you can beat North Carolina, why couldn't you find a way to win at least 2 more other games and at least continue to be bowl eligible? This program has went down ever since Bronco Mendenhall stepped down as the head coach of this football program. And for Tony Elliott, we need to start seeing some results out of this dude eventually. And 2024 is probably going to be the year that is going to decide his fate in Virginia. Lincoln Riley, you talk about dudes who have one of the hottest seats in all of college football walking into next year. Billy Napier, Lincoln Riley, and Sam Pittman, they take the cake. USC, remember before this season started, people looked at this team as not only being the top team in the Pac-12, but a legitimate contender to make it into the college football playoffs. Well, they didn't live up to neither of those expectations. They didn't go to the Pac-12 championship. They didn't make it to the college football playoffs. The main reason for it was because this defense was god-awful under Alex Grinch. And this offense was fairly inconsistent. They had an awful showing against Notre Dame. Against Oregon, they didn't play their best ball offensively in that game neither. Going 7-5, coming off 11-win season, your first year at USC was really disappointing. And going into the Big Ten in 2024, you addressed your defensive coordinator position. You stole De'Anton Lynn from your rival UCLA. Lincoln Riley has to get USC buzzing, and he has to do it fast, because if we see the same product in the Big Ten that we saw this past season, I don't even know if he's going to make it through another season in USC. The expectations are all raised high when you're coaching at that school. You have easy recruiting access. California produces some of the most talented players in all of the nation, so you don't really got to leave out the state. You got a lot of money, a lot of resources to buy whoever, to get whoever you want in the transfer portal. You can pretty much hire the best assistants possible. There's no excuses for USC going 7-5. Lincoln Riley, they're giving this dude way too much money, and I have a lot of respect for Lincoln Riley. So for him to have the worst season that he's ever had, I strongly doubt that this is going to continue. He should be able to turn things around next season, but he definitely has to start winning some games at USC in 2024. And with how tough the Big Ten is, you got Washington and Oregon following you along. You already got Michigan, Penn State, and Ohio State that you're going to have to deal with. It's going to be really tough for Lincoln Riley, but I do think he's capable. But he definitely has to be on this list. He has to win big. Next up, we got my dude Sam Pittman. We talk about how Billy Napier probably has the hottest seed in the SEC going into 2024, but Sam Pittman, he's alongside with them. The thing with Sam Pittman has been that this program, they lost a really good offensive coordinator and a really good defensive coordinator. Their DC, Barry Odom, was the head coach of UNLV this past season. And his first year there, he led them to the Mountain West Conference. And his other offensive coordinator, I believe it was Kendall Briles, he went to TCU. And he was really good. And Sam Pittman didn't really do a good job at nailing their hires when it came to the replacement. He fired Dan Enos. He didn't even make it through the season. I'm a Hurricanes fan. I could have told you that hiring Dan Enos wasn't going to work out. And then you bring in Bobby Petrino, who formerly used to be the head coach at this program. That's a sign of desperation. And at 4-8 in 2023, things still don't look a lot of promising down there in Fayetteville, Arkansas. And I like Sam Pittman. He's a high character guy. It seems like the players really love to play for him. And everybody seems to love the dude. But just because you love somebody doesn't mean you're going to give them a lot of time to stick around. And at one point, it looked like Arkansas was on the rise. You know, 3-7 his first season, then he had a 9-win season in 2021, and then you win only 7 games a year after that, but you have to deal with a lot of injuries that season. We get it. But going 4-8 this year, holy cow. It's like, yeah, Sam Pittman, like, your ass better start winning some games in 2024, and you gotta win big, and it's gonna be tough. I mean, Billy Napier, Florida has a tough schedule, but Arkansas' schedule next season is even tougher. They got a gauntlet. So not only does Sam Pittman have to win big, but he's going to have to do it against some of the top teams, not only in this conference, but in the sport. So good luck to you, Sam Pittman. I'm glad that I'm not in your shoes. Arkansas is a really good job. It's not one of the high-end jobs, but people seem to forget that this is a top 15, top 20 program all time in wins. You get the right guy in here and you can have success. And their ceiling isn't just 10 wins. At one point, Arkansas under Bobby Petrino was competing arguably for SEC titles. I don't think they made it to a SEC conference championship game, but they were contenders in that conference. With Sam Pittman, even if Arkansas is able to have a respectable record, you're not going to really look at them as a team that's a threat to compete for this conference title. But going into 2024, Billy Napier, Sam Pittman, both of these dudes probably have the hottest seats, not just in this conference, but in all of college football. I was surprised that they even brought this dude back for one more season for how bad things went this past year. And lastly, I got my dude Mario Cristobal. Now, he went 7-5 this season, right? And he easily could have won 8-9 games. You had the awful coaching blunder at the end of that Georgia Tech game, and you had a couple of other games that you had a good amount of turnovers in. But if you didn't have those, you possibly could be looking at a 9-1 season if you're Mario Cristobal. Now, I forget who Miami's playing in their bowl game. I don't really care about them winning that bowl game, to be honest with you, because bowl momentum doesn't really mean anything. Mario Cristobal next season, Miami needs to be competing for the ACC conference. Okay, the talent's going to be there. He's going to have a couple of recruiting classes in there now. You're going to have a really good quarterback from the transfer portal starting for you next year, rather that be Will Howard, Cam Ward, or whoever. I need to start seeing some big-time results out of Mario, man. I've been a Hurricanes fan for my whole entire life. And the best head coach I've ever seen at this school was Mark Richt. That one season when we won 10 games and the turnover chain was a big thing and we got smacked by Clemson, the ACC championship, and we lost the Orange Bowl to Wisconsin, and that was it. That's the most success that I've experienced as a Hurricanes fan since I've been a fan of this program. And I was born back in 02, so I got to go back to watch the glory days. I would like to actually live in the glory days. And if Mario Cristobal can't get this program to 9-10 wins next season, then he wouldn't be no better than Manny Diaz or Mark Richt or even Al Golden. Maybe Miami is just one of those programs that they just aren't what they used to be anymore. Maybe this just is a program where at best you're going to get 9-10 wins on your best years and you're just going to be a 6-7 win team, regardless of where you are when it comes to your recruiting location. People think just because you live in the South Florida area, it's easy to recruit, but you got to be able to keep these guys in state, and you got to keep them from going to the other Florida schools like FSU in Florida. You know, it looks like an easy job, and Miami does have pretty solid facilities, but they still do have to improve them. UCF has better facilities than Miami. You know, but when it comes back to Mario Cristobal's performance as a head coach, I'm expecting a big year out of him in 2024. I haven't had high expectations for Miami in a couple of years. I'm going to have them next year in 2024. And am I crazy too? I mean, like, you look at the talent that they're going to have next year. You look at the fact that the quarterback position is going to improve. The defense should be really good. The offense could arguably be one of the offensive line could arguably be one of the best in college football next year. Am I crazy for expecting Mario Cristobal to have Miami competing for the ACC championship in 2024? I don't think I am. And if Miami once again goes 7-5 or they only win 8 games, it would be a disappointment to me. Manny Diaz was able to win 8 games. Mark Richt was able to win 8 games. You see, the problem with these head coaches that Miami hires is that once they get to 8-9 wins or 10 wins, that's it. They never continue to elevate the program. Is Mario Cristobal going to be able to elevate Miami back to the powerhouse that they used to be in the 80s and the 90s and the early 2000s? So these are the list of coaches in college football that must win big and 2024. Let me know if there were some guys that I left out. Maybe there's a guy on this list that you feel doesn't deserve to be on it. Give your thoughts in the comment section down below. Ben Roethlisberger had some really harsh things to say about the Pittsburgh Steelers, man. So on his podcast, Footballing with Ben Roethlisberger, he said after the Steelers lost to the New England Patriots, maybe the tradition of the Pittsburgh Steelers is done. And, you know, a lot of people don't really have a lot of bad things to say about Big Ben as a player. But when it comes to his leadership, it was often questionable. He was somebody who was known for being a jackass. He wasn't really an incredibly easy to like guy. But I do feel like he told a lot of truth in what he said. You know, he had one quote when he said, "Who's grabbing someone by the face mask and saying, that's not what we do?" Roethlisberger added, "Is that happening? Yes, you have guys on defense doing it, but you need guys on other sides of the ball doing it. You need someone to stand up in that room on offense and be like, hey, this isn't what it means to wear the black and gold." And then he had another comment that he said, "This isn't what has been handed down from those teams in the 70s. The steel curtain, the four Super Bowls, the Knowles, the Bradshaws, the Blunts, all those people, it's unbelievable." And his last statement that he said, he criticized Mike Tomlin. "You can't afford in the second half of games to burn silly timeouts and to not have them late in the game," Roethlisberger said on his podcast. "To me, that's bad coaching." Everything that Big Ben said, he was right on the money. I mean, you can say, "Oh, JT, you can't really take Big Ben's comments seriously because this dude wasn't great off the field. He wasn't a great leader. What does he know about leadership?" Say what you want to say about Big Ben. This dude is a future first ballot Hall of Famer. He won two Super Bowls. Big Ben wasn't carried by a great defense once we got to 2012 and 2013. And the later years of Big Ben's career, he was carrying this Steelers team. Well, the offense was carrying this Steelers team. Because you got to remember, after 2011, when the Denver Broncos lost to Tim Tebow in overtime, the defense got old. And it took a couple of years for this defense to get back to playing at an elite level. They were always good getting pressure on the quarterback. But I remember watching countless Steeler games prior to 2021 and 2022 where the defense was a liability. The secondary wasn't that great. The pass rush was the only thing good. And that was a big reason why the Steelers weren't able to win Big Ben a third Super Bowl. That's why they always kept up coming up short to the New England Patriots. You remember when they got blown the hell out by New England in the AFC Championship game? Absolutely embarrassing. People forget that Big Ben had some of his best statistical seasons with the Steelers his last couple of years in Pittsburgh. Once Todd Haley and Bruce Arians arrived, Big Ben's game elevated to a different level. He threw for over 500 yards in the game multiple times. Even Antonio Brown gives Big Ben his props. Like, Antonio Brown says that Big Ben was a fantastic quarterback. Say what you want to say about this dude's leadership. He has a lot of good points. And the same thing that he's saying with the Steelers' tradition being done, or maybe it being done, I've been yelling this for the last couple of months. The standard in Pittsburgh used to be championships. We used to be an organization that used to always expect to be a Super Bowl contender. How come the expectations have went to competing for Super Bowls, expecting to make deep playoff runs, to being okay with 9-8 seasons, maybe making it into the first round of playoffs and getting our ass kicked? Mike Tomlin always preaches how the standard is the standard and mediocrity and complacency should never be tolerated, but that's all the Steelers have been putting up with the last couple of years under him. Starting Mitch Trubisky when you know this dude is ass is complacency and mediocrity at its finest. This team has been mediocre over Mike Tomlin the last couple of years. Being okay with 9-8 seasons and making excuses for Mike Tomlin to keep his job because he's never had a winning season, it's the definition of mediocrity and complacency. When the standard used to be more than that. Now the Mike Tomlin fan club makes the whole defense argument about how you can't fire a guy that wins 9 games consistently. You can't fire Mike Tomlin. He didn't sign Mr. Trubisky. You have to be really naive to think that Mike Tomlin doesn't have a little bit in say-so and who gets drafted and who gets signed to this roster. They signed Mitch Trubisky in free agency. He's been with this team for so long that they're not going to sign a quarterback that's going to replace a future Hall of Famer without running it by Mike Tomlin. You see, Mike Tomlin, he's a really good coach. But I definitely feel like he needs a fresh start elsewhere. And the Steelers need a fresh start too. When's the last time this dude hired a good offensive coordinator? You know, I was listening to Big Ben on his podcast talk about how, you know, in the locker room, it was a family. Everybody was holding guys accountable. I don't really know how truthful that was, because Antonio Brown and Juju Smith-Schuster were kind of doing their own things. But the culture in Pittsburgh when Big Ben was playing was definitely a lot better than what it's been now. You see, with Mike Tomlin, my biggest criticism with him is that he never has his team ready to play against inferior competition. He'll have you ready and buttoned up for the big games, unless you're going against New England and Bill Belichick. But when it comes to playing against teams that the Steelers are expected to beat, this team always finds a way to not get it done. And that's why I never had this team being a playoff team. My prediction for Pittsburgh coming into this season was that they were going to go 9-8. And people were saying, oh, you're just hating on Mike Tomlin. I wasn't hating on Mike Tomlin. I'm just being honest. And I'm happy to know that I'm not the only person that's noticing the same thing. Big Ben, maybe he is right. Maybe the tradition of the Pittsburgh Steelers and what they used to be, the days of the steel curtain, are no longer. But it shouldn't be that way. You got to ask yourself, how have we gotten to this point? We've gotten to this point because Mike Tomlin has not really been able to do a good job at hiring the right guys on offense. And I was listening to Stephen A. Smith on First Take. I don't really like listening to Stephen A. Smith that much when it comes to his football takes. I don't really agree with most of them the majority of times, but he had a point with Big Ben. Big Ben was a little bit of a reason why the Steelers are in the situation that they're in now. You look at how he wasn't able to get along with Todd Haley, and Mike Tomlin ends up having Randy Fichtner promoted to be OC, somebody who Big Ben liked it. And the offense hasn't been the same since. Todd Haley was an incredible offensive coordinator. Not as good as Bruce Arians, but he wasn't too far off. So Stephen A. Smith did have a little bit of a point when he said that Big Ben's hands aren't clean in this situation. He wasn't the most likable guy in the locker room. He went about a lot of things wrong, especially when it came to calling out Antonio Brown in the media. That wasn't a good look. But you still can't deny that this dude was a Hall of Fame caliber quarterback. He led this team to 2 Super Bowls, regardless if he was helped out by the defense or not. Against the Arizona Cardinals, who threw that touchdown pass to Santonio Holmes? This dude, Big Ben, was clutch as hell. And I got a lot of respect for what Big Ben did for this organization. And the fact that he called out Mike Tomlin in this team, in this culture, you think will be a wake-up call for Mike Tomlin. You know, if you're one of those people that continue to go to war for Mike Tomlin, say that he still should be the head coach of Pittsburgh, I ask you, why is it that Big Ben doesn't feel the same way? Because Big Ben, ever since he retired, this team hasn't been the same. And you can say he was carried by the defense all you want to. That was early in his career. His last 5-6 years, this offense was the best thing about this team. And this defense wasn't that great. You know, the defense always had talent, but anytime they went up against a great quarterback, Mike Tomlin's zone defense, that shit got carved up. I'll never forget. I forgot what year it was, but the Steelers were playing the New England Patriots. And you had a cornerback that dropped a potential game-sealing interception. I forgot who the cornerback was that dropped it too. But then right after that, you know what happened? Tom Brady hit Rob Gronkowski on nearly like 2-3 straight receptions, 2-3 straight throws, and they resulted in the Patriots winning that game. They drove down the field and scored a touchdown with ease. You see, the defense for Pittsburgh was not as good Big Ben's final seasons, at least when he was playing at his best level, as what it has been now. You see, Big Ben, his final years, 2019, 2020, those when Big Ben fell off the cliff. That's when he was regressing. That's when the defense finally started to come together and play at a really high level. But prior to 2020, 2019, you know, 2018, like, the defenses were not all that great, in my opinion. You see, the tradition of the Pittsburgh Steelers used to be, this was an organization that the standard was Super Bowl or bust, or at least AFC Championship or bust, or at least divisional round or bust. Mike Tomlin can't even get past the wild card round. I would never forget 2020. Kevin Stefanski goes down. He can't coach in that game because he got deceived. And you would have thought that would have been a guaranteed win. Mike Tomlin gets an interim head coach. He should be able to outcoach that dude. And the Steelers lost that game. Big Ben put him in the hole. But if you want to find another example, what about when the Steelers lost to the Jacksonville Jaguars in the playoffs? And Leonard Fournette ran crazy. And Blake Bortles had a great game against this Steelers defense. Mike Tomlin's supposed to be a defensive-minded coach, but his defense got embarrassed in the division round, coming off a first-round bye, by the way, against Blake Bortles and Leonard Fournette. Big Ben got him in a hole in that game, but the defense didn't really do them no favors either because they couldn't stop the run. Like, Big Ben, he said a lot of truth in his podcast. And maybe you Mike Tomlin defenders don't want to hear it because you continue to make all the excuses in the world for why Mike Tomlin isn't the problem. But he really is the problem. And if you can't accept the fact that he is, then you're just naive. Like, I get tired of hearing this whole excuse. He didn't pick Mitch Trubisky. Yes, he did. He may not have had 100% of the say in the matter, but I'm pretty sure with how long Mike Tomlin has been the head coach of this organization, they're not going to draft or sign any big-time quarterback that's going to replace a guy like Big Ben without running it by him first. Mike Tomlin has a little bit of a say when it comes to these personnel decisions because he's earned that based on what he's done for this franchise. But now, you know, I think that the standard has went down and the new standard in Pittsburgh is mediocrity and 9-8 seasons are okay. I would love to get back to having expectations when Super Bowl was the goal and not being okay with just making it into the wild card round and getting smacked and embarrassed. This was an organization that I remember when I first became a fan of this team back in 2008, 2009, when I first started ever watching football, they were always expected to win it all. And it was nothing more, nothing less. And anything less than competing for a Super Bowl or not making a deep playoff run was unacceptable. Yes, people have some down years, but the Steelers, they haven't reached the Super Bowl in what? Going on nearly 14 years, man. I was in third grade when the Steelers lost to the Green Bay Packers in the Super Bowl. I was in first or second grade when they won their last Super Bowl against Kurt Warner in Arizona. So I've seen when this organization used to have high expectations, when they used to have a gold standard, and I've watched the expectations get lower and lower every single season. I don't have any grudge against Mike Tomlin. I love Mike Tomlin. I love this dude as a leader. This dude is a great rah-rah guy. But when it comes to in-game execution, his clock management isn't great. He doesn't make great in-game adjustments. He waits too long to make personnel decisions that should have been made earlier. Mason Cole should be benched right now. There's no denying that. Like, their left tackle, Broderick Jones, this dude should have been starting from day one. And I know I'm not a coach. I know I don't have a right to say what a head coach should do or not. But I'm pretty sure a lot of the things that we've been seeing out of Mike Tomlin choosing to continue to start Mitch Trubisky when he should be starting Mason Rudolph, it's just freaking common sense. Like, Mike Tomlin's best coaching job was when they were winning games with Mason Rudolph and Duck Hodges and they nearly made it to the playoffs with Big Ben having that elbow injury. That was the best coaching job I've ever seen Mike Tomlin have. And for the previous couple of years, Mike Tomlin has overachieved. But this season, when the expectations were for Pittsburgh to at least be able to win 10, 11 games, I didn't have them winning more than 9 games, but the majority of people felt this was a team that was good enough to win 10 games or more. And they don't look like they're on track to do that. You may not love Big Ben. I know that this dude is a great player. He's one of the greatest Steelers of all time. He's a future first ballot Hall of Famer, but a lot of people don't really care for Big Ben that much as a person, and I understand why. But he does have a lot of valid points, and his harsh criticisms or his harsh truths about the Steelers franchise right now, where they're at, and his thoughts on Mike Tomlin are pretty valid too. Before we move on, if you're enjoying this episode of the podcast, leave a like, subscribe to the channel. Please, I'm begging y'all, get your cell phone, go to Spotify Podcast or Apple Podcast, wherever you listen to your podcast at, and give the JT Sports Podcast a 5-star review. Okay, I'm not asking for donations. All I'm asking is for you to take 10 to 15 seconds to rate the podcast 5 stars. That helps us out a lot. It's a great way to show that you support and you appreciate the content. And remember that every episode of the podcast that's uploaded on the channel is available in audio format on all podcasting platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcasts from, the JT Sports Podcast is available. Before we move on, we're going to have a quick word from our sponsor. Make sure that you go ahead, grab you a Galaxy Star Projector. They make for a great Christmas gift for friends, families, and loved ones, children as well. And Christmas is only a couple of days away. So if you're looking for a last minute gift to put underneath the tree, the Galaxy Star Projector would be a great gift to get. Man, are you tired of looking at your stale, boring ass room? You want to know a way you can spice your room up and turn that thing into an out of this galaxy experience? Click the link in the description or pinned comment and grab you a Starry Projector Light. The Starry Projector Light comes with 10 changeable color options, a built-in Bluetooth speaker, 12 and 15 switchable constellations, planets, moons, and stars. Transform your room from a depressing wasteland into a vibrant starry wonderland. The Starry Projector Light makes for a great holiday gift for family, friends, and loved ones. Click the link in the description or pinned comment and get one today and transform your room into a breathtaking starry wonderland. Oh my goodness! Can y'all believe it? Texas football is finally back. Who would have thought that this day would actually come where we would see the Longhorns playing in the college football playoffs, man? And when I said that Texas was going to make it to the playoffs before the season started, everybody was saying, here you go. Everybody always hypes up Texas and they never live up to the hype. Well, they did this year, people. And now that they're in the playoffs, they got a really good chance to win it all this season. If you're looking at one of the most explosive teams in college football, you're talking about Texas, okay? They have probably the most talented offense compared to the rest of the other three teams that are in the playoff field this year. They got a great offensive line. They got an incredible deep group of running backs. Their starting running back got injured. He's out for the remainder of this season. It doesn't matter. They still have guys coming in and making big plays on the ground. But when you look at this passing attack, Quinn Ewers, when he's on and he's consistent, he's one of the best quarterbacks in the nation. And this receiving core is just as good as Washington's. Now, Washington's wide receiving core, they're just a few notches better than Texas because I believe that they got three potential first-round NFL wide receivers, especially Roma Dunze. He's a monster, but Texas, they're not too far off. You got Xavier Worthy, A.D. Mitchell, Jordan Winnington. You got a really good tight end. Most of these defenses that are in the playoffs this year, they're going to have a hard time trying to slow down this offense. They're balanced. They can beat you throwing the football downfield, explosive plays out of Xavier Worthy and A.D. Mitchell. And then you also can get explosive plays on the ground. But this defense is just as good as the offense. The secondary is a big concern, especially going against Washington in the semifinal matchup. But outside of Washington, if Texas has to play Alabama or Michigan in the national championship, it's a mismatch. We saw what they did when they went on the road and beat Alabama and Tuscaloosa. Not anybody can just beat Alabama and Tuscaloosa. A lot of people have to realize that. Alabama has only lost at home a handful of times under Nick Saban. They haven't lost more than, what, 5-6 times the last couple of years? Prior to Texas beating Alabama at Alabama? The only two teams to do that previously were Ole Miss when they had Hugh Freeze and that 2019 Joe Burrow-led LSU team. That was it. So when you look at Texas, this team is legit. And this defense, is just as good as the offense. They got a really good front seven. They got great linebackers. They got defensive linemen that can get after your quarterback. They're going to be a hard matchup if they got to go up against Alabama or Michigan. And I truthfully believe that whoever wins this game between Washington and Texas is most likely going to win the national championship. This defense, you can't run on them. They're fourth in America in rushing yards per game allowed. You can't score on them in the red zone. They have a top five red zone defense. They have the best third down defense in college football. They're 10th in points per game allowed. They're 20th in yards per game allowed. The only thing that gives you concern if you're a Longhorns fan is how your secondary is going to hold up against Michael Penix and those Washington Husky wide receivers. They're the only team really in this year's playoff that perfectly matches up against Texas. Texas' biggest weakness on defense, that's Washington's biggest strength on offense, their ability to throw the football and generate big plays. But if you can get past Washington and you got to play Bama or Michigan, you're most likely going to win it all. Texas is a complete team. They don't really have too many glaring weaknesses other than their corners and their safeties. That's about it. Steve Sarkisian, he's one of the best play callers in the sport. You know that he's always going to call the best plays to have Quinn Ewers in the best situation to have success. And Quinn Ewers, he's been really lights out this season. He missed a little bit of a stretch due to injuries, but he's been way more consistent in 2023 compared to how he was his first season starting for Texas. Texas, they're back, people, and they are good enough to win it all potentially. I know it sounds crazy that we're talking about Texas being able to win a national championship because it's been a while, but this team is really scary. The more talented, in my opinion, than Michigan and Alabama this year. If you're looking at this team from a pure talent standpoint, they're the most talented team in the playoffs this year. Not just based on how they performed on the field, but if you look at the talent that they have from the transfer portal in recruiting, Michigan and Bama, they're not as good as what Texas is. And you see Alabama and Michigan, the reason why they're such a bad matchup for Texas is because these are teams that are predicated on running the football. Yes, they have the ability to throw the football, but they need the run game to open up the pass game. Texas doesn't allow that to happen. Therefore, if Alabama or Michigan are going up against Texas in the Natty, they're not really going to have a lot of success offensively. Michigan isn't a team that's built to beat you throwing the football. Texas secondary isn't good, but Jalen Milroe isn't the kind of quarterback that's good enough to exploit a weak secondary or a questionable secondary. Go back and look at the game the first time these two teams played against each other. It wasn't pretty when they slowed down the run game of the Tide. Michigan, we haven't really seen a game this past year when J.J. McCarthy has had to carry Michigan with his arm. But you remember last time when Michigan had to ask J.J. McCarthy to throw the ball 30-plus. It didn't look pretty when they lost to TCU. Texas and Washington are most likely going to be the teams that win it all. I believe Texas has a really great chance to do it. Not really saying that Washington does have a chance because you guys know how I feel about Washington. I truthfully believe that they're going to be able to win it all. But Texas, they make it really hard for me to make that decision. And I'm still kind of on the fence about who I have being able to win the playoffs this year. But I'm either going with either Texas or Washington. That's going to be my pick. But these are my reasons for why Texas can win the national championship in 2024. The writing is on the wall for Bill Belichick and his tenure with the New England Patriots. According to a report that just came out, the Patriots decided to move on from Bill Belichick right after they lost in Germany to the Indianapolis Colts. And it's time. Bill Belichick, he's not a bad head coach. It's just time for him to get a fresh start. We've seen this in similar situations with Andy Reid when his time in Philadelphia came to an end. He got fired. He goes to Kansas City and he wins a couple of Super Bowls. Bill Belichick, if he can get hired by the Los Angeles Chargers, I think that he could be good enough to get them to a Super Bowl. It's not that this dude has lost it when it comes to knowing what it takes to have a good team or a championship caliber team, at least defensively. His defenses are championship caliber. It's just that he's terrible when it comes to drafting on the offense side of the football. He doesn't know how to draft receivers, doesn't know how to evaluate that position. And ever since Tom Brady left, this franchise hasn't been the same. You know, Mac Jones looked really promising his first season. But when Josh McDaniels left, what did Bill Belichick do? He hired Matt Patricia, a defensive coordinator, promoting him to be his offensive coordinator. This dude never called plays before, doesn't have that much experience on the offensive side of football. And he said, yep, you're going to be the guy responsible for the development of my young quarterback that I invested a first round pick into, making that big leap in year two. You see, Bill Belichick's, you know, ineptness on offense has led to his downfall. Tom Brady was the system. He was the only constant thing that never changed with New England's offense. You know, even when Gronk was out, you had Chris Hogan, Julian Edelman making plays because of Brady. Brady was one of those kinds of players who was able to elevate the whole team around him and the guys calling the plays. It's easy when you're calling plays for the GOAT versus calling plays for Mac Jones. You see, Bill Belichick, the fact that he mishandled that offensive coordinator hire in Mac Jones' second season is why Mac Jones is where he's at in this state of his NFL career. You can say Mac Jones never should have got drafted in the first round. That's understandable. But let's not act like this dude didn't show a little bit of promise when he led the Patriots to 11-5 record and they went to the postseason that year in his rookie year. Things went downhill when Bill Belichick promoted Matt Patricia as his OC. And he tried to correct that mistake, but it was already too little too late. You see, once you have your young quarterback in a situation where he's going outside the organization to seek help, that's a sign that things are not looking good for him when it comes to his development. Mac Jones didn't trust Matt Patricia to the point where he was going elsewhere to try to get help, to try to get assistance. You can put all of the Patriots' offensive problems on Mac Jones all you want to, but Bill Belichick deserves a lot of blame for that decision to make Matt Patricia his OC. And you bring in Bill O'Brien, you thought that he would be able to make this offense at least a tad bit better than what it was under Matt Patricia, but things still haven't gotten better. As a matter of fact, they look just as bad or maybe worse than what it was in 2022. Offensive line ain't great. Receivers can't really separate. The best receiver for New England has not been Juju or Kendrick Bourne or Devontae Parker, a dude who Bill Belichick decided to give a 3-year deal to, $30 million. That was another awful decision, and it further illustrates Bill Belichick's ineptness on offense. It was DeMario Douglas. DeMario Pop Douglas is the most talented wide receiver that the Patriots had on this roster this past season. And he's injured right now, and we don't know when he's going to come back. And you know who would have been able to have an impact on this offense was Jacoby Myers. It seems like Bill Belichick only has an eye for receivers in the later portions of the draft. When it comes to finding elite wide receivers or just serviceable wide receivers in the first, second rounds of the draft, he just doesn't know how to find any good ones. I mean, this past year, you could have had Tank Dell. He was a third-round selection. You could have had Josh Downs. Maybe you could have passed over Chris Gonzalez and maybe prioritized getting a better wide receiver. Christian Gonzalez was really great, but he didn't really play that much. And Bill Belichick, he's so good scouting and evaluating talent at corner that I would have trusted him to draft the receiver in the first round and try to address the need of getting another cornerback later on in the draft. Since you're so great at doing it, a lot of Bill Belichick's best players, some of them have been undrafted free agency steals. Some of them have been late round gems. Bill Belichick is a really good talent evaluator when it comes to every position other than quarterback and wide receiver. He does a really good job at drafting defensive and offensive linemen Cornerback is always a really good position on his team. The defense is never a problem. The problem is he doesn't know what the fuck he's doing on offense anymore. So for New England, you got to move on from him. This was the same person who felt like Brady was replaceable, when really he should have gave in to Brady's commands. He should have gave Brady the help that he wanted, tried to get a big-time acquisition at wide receiver, like maybe a Stephon Diggs who was available at the time. But instead, Bill Belichick was like, nah, Brady, like, you go somewhere else. You're replaceable. This dude never wanted Jimmy Garoppolo gone. He wanted to keep Jimmy Garoppolo. Brady forced Jimmy G to get traded. He went to Robert Kraft. He said, enough of this, man. Like, get Jimmy G out of here. I'm the dude. I'm the guy. I'm the franchise QB. Trust me. And, you know, the more you think about the whole Brady and Bill Belichick, who is more responsible for the Patriots dynasty success, it looks more and more like Tom Brady was Batman and Bill Belichick was Robin. There's no denying how great of a coach Bill Belichick is. He does a really great job at paying attention to details. Antonio Brown said that Bill Belichick is the smartest head coach that he's ever played under. You know, during practice, they'll figure out which referees are going to be calling the game, and they'll try to make calls based on what the referees call really often. So if you got a referee crew that likes to call a lot of pass interference penalties, then what will the Patriots do? They will try to practice without not having a lot of grabbing. If you have a referee crew that calls a lot of holding penalties, then you'll have your offensive linemen practicing with boxing gloves on. You know, that's really good attention to detail. And it seems like Bill Belichick, the last couple of years, he's lost that small attention to detail. At least when it comes to the offensive side of the football. If you put Bill Belichick on the Chargers, they immediately are Super Bowl contenders right away, because you don't have to touch the offense. The receiver group is already set. You got Keenan Allen, Mike Williams. You got Austin Eckler. You're going to have Justin Herbert, a really good offensive line. And your defense is super talented already. Although they may have to part ways with a couple of players or two, it still should be good enough to be a top 10 unit if Bill Belichick is the head coach there. But as far as him being the dude in Foxborough, this organization, this franchise, they need a new head coach, because they got to rebuild a little bit. You got to get a new quarterback. You got to get some receivers in there. You got Pop. That's about it. You know, Bill Belichick, he also is the GM. He doesn't need to be the general manager for whichever new team he goes to if he does decide to coach for another franchise, because he hasn't shown the ability to be able to assemble a championship caliber team. We know he can give us a championship defense. You know, defense wins championships, but the offense has to score some damn points. This offense is abysmal. And I mean, he had Malik Cunningham. Malik Cunningham should have gotten a start. This dude has a lot of athletic upside with his mobility. I would have loved to see Malik Cunningham be able to start a game or two for New England, but he ends up signing with the Ravens practice squad. And oddly enough, Bill Belichick actually commented on it. He said, you know, he was better suited going to play for Baltimore with what they like to do with Lamar Jackson, and he's a better fit in that offense than what he is down here in Foxborough. Why is that, Bill Belichick? Why is it that Malik Cunningham wasn't able to work out in New England? You weren't able to adapt your offense around him? I mean, you should have already tried to give him a look, because Bailey Zappe isn't it. Mac Jones definitely isn't it. If you think that Bill Belichick should get another year in Foxborough, you're crazy. It's done. Like, he's still going to be the GM, and he's going to be the head coach too. And he hasn't shown the ability to know what the hell it takes to assemble a championship caliber defense. You know, you think it wouldn't be that hard. He's one of the greatest coaches in the history of football, college and NFL combined. But the thing with Nick Saban is that Nick Saban, what makes him different from Bill Belichick, even though they coach in two different leagues, Nick Saban has always been able to adapt. Bill Belichick, he struggles to adapt. Brady was the only reason why that offense was as good as what it was. You take him away, this offense hasn't been even serviceable. This offense has been abysmal, minus Mac Jones' rookie season. And the reason why Mac Jones looks like a bust isn't just because the dude can't play. It's because Bill Belichick, instead of going out of the organization and giving this dude a good offensive coordinator to help him in his second season, he gives him a defensive coordinator as his offensive coordinator. Come on, Bill. What the hell was that? Bill Belichick has to go. It's time for the New England Patriots to move on and go in a different direction. There's another head coach whose future is in question. Arthur Smith is likely to return as the head coach for the Atlanta Falcons in 2024. He, to me, isn't a bad coach. Okay, Atlanta probably is going to be around 6 to 8 wins this year. If they win this division, it definitely is going to be really promising when you think about the future of this franchise moving forward because of how bad the NFC South is right now with Dennis Allen, Todd Bowles being awful head coaches, and Frank Wright just got fired. Arthur Smith is probably the best head coach in this division at this moment. However, him being the best coach in the NFC South doesn't really mean much. And the thing with Arthur Smith is that he's not a terrible head coach. He kind of reminds me a lot of Jeff Fisher. You know, he's good enough to have you in the middle of the pack. He can win you 7-8 games. You can be respectable. And that's about it. Sometimes he tries to be the smartest guy in the room. He calls trick plays with his tight end, doing tight end passes instead of trying to find ways to get his first round pick, Bijan Robinson, involved. Drake London, Kyle Pitts have also been first round picks that Arthur Smith had a lot of say in the Falcons getting and investing first round capital to acquire, and yet he has struggled to get them involved. And the reason for that is because he hasn't gotten quarterback right. When you have a good quarterback, it makes life easier as a head coach. He hasn't shown that he's a terrible offensive-minded coach. That's why I say that he's not a shit head coach. If he was a terrible head coach, you'll see what you saw down there in Charlotte, Carolina, having one of the worst offensive lines in the NFL. Atlanta's offense, to me, is in the middle of the pack. The only thing holding back this team is their lack of talent at quarterback. Desmond Ridder isn't it. Yeah, he did want Desmond Ridder. But when you mess up on drafting somebody and they're not the dude who you thought they could have been, you got to move on and you got to pivot. I would like to see Arthur Smith get one more year in Atlanta. I know you Falcons fans are probably going to be pissed off with that, but he's not a bad head coach. Your offense doesn't suck. Your offense is at least serviceable. The only thing holding you back is quarterback play. You get the quarterback situation figured out. Hell, if you get Kirk Cousins, that could make you a playoff caliber team without a doubt. If you get Justin Fields, that could be really interesting. Arthur Smith isn't a net when it comes to having a solid game plan, when it comes to calling good plays. Like, he may have a couple of bad plays here and there, but that's every head coach. You see, when you got a great quarterback, he could turn a bad play call into a great play call. That's why Arthur Smith needs to go ahead and get him one. He's a really good offensive-minded coach. Yeah, he may not be utilizing Bijan Robinson to the best of his ability, similar to Kyle Pitts, but it's not like those guys haven't gotten involved at all. How much of that is on Arthur Smith and how much of that is on the fact that they just don't have a good quarterback? You get Justin Fields or you can get Kirk Cousins in there, or you can trade for an elite quarterback like maybe a Kyler Murray, or you can draft a Bo Nix or Jaden Daniels. This offense is going to be way better with the better QB than what it is with Desmond Ridder, and definitely what it was under Marcus Mariota. You see, the Falcons have a playoff caliber team. And from a talent standpoint, they possibly could be good enough to win a playoff game. But they just don't have the quarterback to do so. And you need a quarterback if you want to be a successful head coach in this league. You can't be a great head coach with average to below average quarterback play. And you're getting below average quarterback play out of Desmond Ridder, especially somebody who turns the football over. Arthur Smith's philosophy is running the football, smash mouth football. You can't run a smash heavy offense or smash mouth offense that's predicated on ball control when you can't prioritize ball security if you're Desmond Ridder. Desmond Ridder, he's not a good game manager. And people say, well, if Arthur Smith is such an offensive-minded coach, he should be able to turn Desmond Ridder into a solid quarterback. If you can't play, you can't play. Desmond Ridder, at best, is a backup quarterback. Kyle Shanahan is one of the best offensive minds of the past era, and Trey Lance was a bust under him. Like, if you're not good, you're not good. There's only so much coaching that you can give a dude to try to put a dude in a situation to succeed if he just can't go out there and execute. And Desmond Ridder at times hasn't been able to execute. You can develop a guy and yell at a guy and coach a guy up in the film room all day long, but if that guy just can't go out there and get it done, there's nothing you can do about that. But what Arthur Smith can do is pivot off Desmond Ridder, stop bringing in these bridge stopgap quarterbacks or these average at best, these Alex Smith kind of QBs, and go out there and get you a quality quarterback. Like, I definitely believe that they were in the market for Deshaun Watson. Fuck all that. Man, it's too much money, JT. If you're a head coach and you're trying to win and you're trying to be coaching your organization for a long time, you need to get quarterback right. You get put out in bad situations when you don't have quarterback situated. There's a reason why the quarterback position is the highest paid in all of the NFL. There's a reason why the QB position is the most important in the National Football League. I get tired of these people trying to make it seem like if you're a good coach, you can win with anybody. Yeah, maybe for a few years or so, but eventually if you're trying to make it to a Super Bowl or you're trying to elevate, you need great quarterback play. They went from Matt Ryan, who pretty much was a borderline Hall of Famer, to Marcus Mariota and Desmond Ridder. Not good. Go get you a quarterback, Arthur Smith. He's not a bad coach. You look at his record, it's not like he's finishing with one of the worst records in the NFL, and the Falcons aren't getting blown the hell out. The Falcons have been competitive in nearly every single game that they played in this year. Now, yeah, that's because the schedule is pretty easy, but at the same time, with a better quarterback, the Falcons possibly could be an 8-9 win team right now. The defense has looked really good. His defensive coordinator hire, Ryan Nielsen, I believe that's his name, he's been outstanding. The offense just hasn't been able to hold up their end of the bargain because you got Desmond Ridder turning the football over, especially in the red zone. Like, Arthur Smith needs to get him a quarterback. That's the only thing holding back Atlanta. He may have a couple of bad play calls here and there, but that's every play caller. Nobody calls a perfect game. There's always going to be some plays that aren't good, but when you have an elite quarterback, he makes the dude calling the plays look better because he can make a good play look like a great play, and he can make a bad play look like it was a good play due to how good he is. Arthur Smith, I want to see him get one more year. If he doesn't draft a quarterback, if he doesn't try to trade for a big-time quarterback that's already established, don't even allow this dude to coach the season. If Desmond Ridder or Taylor Heineke or a quarterback that isn't really all that great is going to be starting for him in 2024, just fire him before the season starts, make life easy for you, and just go ahead and move on. But Arthur Smith, if he has some damn common sense, he'll go out there and get him a quarterback. I don't think Justin Fields would be a bad pickup. You can get him for a third, fourth round pick. Yeah, you'll have to pay for the final year of his contract, but it's only $90-something million, so it's not that big of a cap hit. With Kyle Pitts, Drake London, and Bijan Robinson, Atlanta should be a playoff team. Like, you mean to tell me Justin Fields and Bijan Robinson or Tyler Algier in the backfield wouldn't scare you? If you're opposing defense, we know how much of a monster Bijan is. Think about how much damage they could do adding Justin Fields to the rushing attack. Desmond Ridder is a really good runner, but he's no Justin Fields. Justin Fields, like, he sounded a little crazy this past summer when he said he's one of the best dual threat quarterbacks of all time, but I don't think he's too crazy for saying that. Desmond Ridder doesn't have the athleticism that Justin Fields has. Justin Fields is like a running back when he decides to tote the rock. And he's also a pretty solid passer. He's just inconsistent. You know, he's not great when it comes to reading defenses, but there are plenty of quarterbacks who aren't great when it comes to dissecting defenses and making the proper reads. That's why as an offensive-minded coach, you should be able to come in and make life easier for them. That's when coaching comes into play. You should be able to coach that up. The Bears have been able to win games with Justin Fields. And when Justin Fields is on, he's on. Like, don't make it seem like you haven't seen Justin Fields going off. Because when he goes off, he's damn near unstoppable. This is the reason why the players voted him in the NFL Top 100. Like, he has the respect. They understand his situation. Given to an offensive-minded coach like Arthur Smith that, to me, was better than what Matt Nagy was. And better than whoever the hell they got calling plays for them in Chicago now as their OC. Like, you give Arthur Smith Justin Fields could be humming. Arthur Smith returning as Atlanta's head coach in 2024, I wouldn't be against it. If they move on from him, I wouldn't be against that neither. But if you can get that quarterback situation right, Atlanta should be a playoff team. This is it for this episode of the JT Sports Podcast. If you enjoyed, leave a like, subscribe to the channel. Remember that every episode of the podcast is available in audio format on all podcasting platforms, Apple, Google, Spotify, Amazon. If you enjoyed tonight's episode, please, please, I'm begging you. You're like, your Christmas gift for me, from you to me, is giving the JT Sports Podcast a 5-star review. It's the holiday season. All I want is a 5-star review. That's it. You know, if you want to leave a comment or if you got a question that you would like answered on a potential episode of the podcast, you can leave it in the review and I would definitely get to it. Or you can hit me up on Instagram at JTSports_ or on X at JTSports_. If you have a question that you would like answered on the podcast, but I appreciate you guys for tuning in and I will see you guys shortly with another episode of the JT Sports Podcast.